So some of you know that just recently we've packed things up and are moving out to the lake while our daughter is in our home. And while doing that, I came across a sermon that I'd written a number of years ago when I was involved in another church. And as I read through it, I thought, man, this still applies today, 15 years later. And so I want to share it with you. And the passage is based on writing from the Gospel of Luke. And I'm pretty sure that it's a passage that doesn't get read often in the Unitarian Church. There are a lot of people that have interpreted this a lot of different ways, so we're going to unpack it together. So from the 21st chapter of Luke, there are signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. On the earth, nations will be in anguish and perplexity at the roaring and tossing of the sea. People will faint from terror, apprehensive of what is coming in the world, for the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. When these things begin to take place, stand up and lift up your heads, because your redemption is drawing near. He told them this parable: look at the fig tree and all the trees. When they sprout leaves, you can see for yourselves and know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that the kingdom of God is near. Be careful, or your hearts will be weighed down with dissipation, drunkenness, and the anxieties of life, and that day will close on you suddenly like a trap. For it will come on all those who live on the face of the earth. Be always on the watch, and pray that you may be able to escape what is about to happen, and that you may be able to stand before the Son of Man. Now, I just want you to remember that I'm a Unitarian now, too. So let's explore this together. Have you ever gotten out of bed in the morning, jumped up and looked out the window, only to discover that you could hardly see a thing? Sometime in the night, a misty blanket of fog had descended and made it difficult for you to see even the buildings across the street. Well, when I was a kid, on those mornings, I could be sure that if I flipped the calendar ahead 3 months, I would see an entry: very foggy morning, December 17th. My mother believed that heavy fog was a sign of a bad storm 90 days later. We were quite skeptical, but the next time there was a major storm, she'd say, "Look at the calendar, there was fog 90 days ago." This passage from Luke refers to the signs and warnings, and it's not an easy passage to understand, especially for those of us who have difficulty picturing Jesus coming through the clouds. But we have to remember that Luke was not writing to us. He was writing to the people of his day. And Luke had a passion for history, and he wanted to record as accurately as possible the life and ministry of Jesus. He hadn't been a part of Jesus' ministry. He had never met Jesus personally. And so he had to use the resources that were available to him. And that was the stories and the traditions that had been passed down to him orally, as well as the writings of others before him, such as the writer of the Gospel of Mark. And most scholars believe that Luke wrote this gospel in the later part of the first century, most likely after the fall of Jerusalem in 70 AD. So it's important to take note of those things as we read this passage, because it helps us to keep it in context. The early Christians believed strongly that Christ would return, and that his return would put an end to all the negative things of life: the oppression, the wars, the bad things that happen to good people. The hope of liberation was at the center of the faith that the Jewish people had grown up with. But as the years went by and no return seemed in sight, they began to lose hope. And then to have their beautiful temple destroyed could well have devastated any hope they had left. And hope lost is a terrible thing. A friend of ours had been diagnosed with cancer a few years back, and it was quite advanced, and yet there seemed to be so many signs of hope along the way. He was the last person in the province to be able to get a controversial drug that was controversial because of the cost. But that drug helped to shrink a lot of the tumor, and he got his color back, he gained some weight. And then after a lot of letter writing, they were able to find a doctor in Toronto who was willing to perform the surgery. And their hopes escalated dramatically. But then the email came that when they were preparing to do the surgery and doing the scope beforehand, they discovered all kinds of tumors on his abdominal wall, and they had to cancel the surgery, and nothing more could be done. So just like that, all hope was gone. And hope lost is a terrible thing. In the writing of his gospel, Luke needed to make sense of the horror that had come upon the Jewish people. And so he chose to put that devastation into the context of end times. Earlier in the passage, he has Jesus predict the destruction of the temple. And now he refers to that in the context of other tumultuous signs. It wasn't necessarily that Jesus had predicted it, but Luke wrote his story that way to make it look as though Jesus had predicted the destruction of the temple. So Luke used those things that had taken place to restore the people's hope that Jesus would again return. These are all signs, Luke wrote, that Jesus was coming back soon. Don't give up. Hang in there. Don't lose hope. It's going to happen. Hope restored makes all the difference in how we see life and how we live life. There was a teacher who was given the job of regularly visiting students that were in the children's sick hospital in a large city. And one particular homeroom teacher had asked her to go and visit this boy and let him know that they were working on verbs and adverbs. Exciting stuff, right? So she went, and nobody had prepared her for the fact that this little boy was severely burned and in the burn unit. So when she walked in, she was shocked to see what bad shape he was in. And so she just kind of awkwardly stammered, "I'm the teacher that was sent to help you with nouns and adverbs." And then next morning, or a couple mornings later, one of the nurses said to her, "What did you do to that boy? Like, things have just changed dramatically. We were really worried about him, but now it's like he's got a new lease on life and he's responding to treatment and it's as though he's decided to live." And later the boy explained that he'd completely given up hope until he saw that teacher. And it all changed when he came to the realization that they wouldn't send a teacher to work on nouns and adverbs with a dying boy, would they? Hope restored makes all the difference. As we begin to understand some of the history of this passage, we ask ourselves, what does it mean to us today? Luke's descriptions might not be the sign of Jesus' return, but they are signs of a world in turmoil. And some things that Luke spoke about back then can still be applied to our lives. Even the descriptions, nations in uproar, people in anguish at the roaring and the tossing of the seas. It's probably only been in the last 20 years that I've ever heard the word tsunami. I didn't know what it meant the first time I heard it. People feeling terrorized, apprehensive of the things that are happening in their world, and not just in our generation, but years before and years to come. Luke's descriptions certainly speak to all of us. But we, however, have the benefit of 2,000 years in between. We know that Christ hasn't returned, at least not the way the early Christians thought he would. But keep in mind also that people of that time had no idea what lay above the clouds. To them, that was their God's dwelling place. In this last century, we've flown above the clouds, we've been to the moon. We know that space is far more vast than people of Luke's day could have even imagined. So it was easy for them to picture Jesus coming in the clouds. It's a lot harder for us to think of that as a possibility. So is there anything in Luke's words for us? Perhaps the message isn't so much about being rescued. Perhaps it's about learning how to live in the midst of whatever life gives us. Father Jerry Pierce says, like the prophets before him, Luke is painting a grim view of the future in order to influence the present. He doesn't want to paralyze them with fear, but energize them into action. The real purpose of speaking about the last days is to affect the present one. Be awake. Look reality in the eye and take action. This passage invites us to do two things. Be realistic about how the world is going, and at the same time, don't lose hope in the future. The end of the passage, which I think in some ways is the heart of the passage, challenges to be alert, to be on the watch, to be prayerful and hopeful. And it seems to me that we're being called to live each day to the fullest. I read an article recently in which the writer said, when are Christians going to stop treating life like an 80-year stopover to something better? It's not about tomorrow. It's about today. And it's not just Christians. Psychologist William Marston asked 3,000 people, "What have you to live for?" And he was shocked to discover that 94% of them were simply enduring the present while they waited for the future, while they waited for something to happen, while they waited for next year, for a better time, while they waited for someone to die, while they waited for tomorrow. More than being about the beginning of the end, I think this passage is about having hope for today and living today to the fullest. Hope is what keeps us going. There was a story of a passenger crossing the Atlantic on a big ship, and it had been day after day of rough seas, and this woman was turning various shades of green, and she was leaning over a rail when a steward came along and tried to cheer her up. "Don't be discouraged, ma'am. You know, no one's ever died of seasickness yet." The nauseous passenger looked up and said, "Oh, don't say that. It's only the hope of dying that's keeping me alive." Hope is what keeps us going. But the warning that Luke issues is clear. Be careful, or your hearts will be weighed down with dissipation, drunkenness, and the anxieties of life. I don't know about you, but I had to look up the word dissipation, just like tsunami. Well, it means wasteful expenditure or consumption. And doesn't that sound like something written to our generation? As one commentator wrote, we may not necessarily be weighed down with drunkenness and debauchery, but our self-indulgences and vested interest in sustaining our lifestyle at the expense of people trapped in poverty lives out in equal irresponsibility, both locally and globally. And perhaps it contributes to our anxieties, which in turn causes us to focus on tomorrow instead of today. As Christians enter the season of Advent, they celebrate the coming of Jesus. And the Jewish people also wait in hope for their Messiah to come and rescue them. Most of those early Christians were Jewish people who believed that Jesus was their Messiah. But he certainly didn't come the way they thought he would. He didn't come with a host of armies to rescue them from their oppressors. But slowly they came to realize that this man Jesus had come with wisdom and truth and new understanding that gave them the freedom to live life to the fullest in the midst of their oppression. Through his words, his teachings, they discovered a new way to live. As Father Pierce says, liberation may be less than the appearance of Christ in the clouds and more about the rising of the Spirit of Christ in his teachings of renewal and global transformation. No matter what you believe or don't believe about Jesus, his words and teachings did bring light and new understanding to many who lived in darkness, and they've had their influence on us 2,000 years later. Throughout the years, many other wise and compassionate leaders have made a difference in the society that they were born into. Perhaps Jesus or the Spirit of Jesus has come again many times and many ways through many people. But have we missed the signs? At a time when the Jewish people seemed covered in darkness, some of them recognized something special about this person, Jesus. And at a time when we feel darkness and apprehension, can we look around us and see the signs of hope in the people and the events around us? I think of the people who have spoken here over the last year, in the young people like Sophia Young pouring their energies into making a difference in the world, farmers gathering together to share their land with First Nations people, in the husband and the wife bringing fruition to their vision for affordable housing. It just gives me goosebumps when I think of some of these things. In the Mathembo brothers and their friends walking the streets in their neighborhood at night looking for people who might need their help. In the senior who volunteers at the food bank and the teenager who stops to help an elderly woman who's fallen. Who have you seen hope in this week? And has anyone seen hope in you? God, Spirit, hope continues to come to us and through us. Do we recognize the signs? Some of nature's signs are obvious to us, especially the signs of spring. At this time of solstice, as we inch through the darkness to the returning light, could we also become so adept at recognizing the signs of hope among us? What if we were to respond to those signs in the same spirit that we do to the leaves budding and the crocuses blooming? You know how excited you get over that? What are the signs of hope among us? A moment of kindness, a feeling of warmth, a good belly laugh shared with another, a heartfelt hug, a touch of compassion, a word of encouragement. These are the signs that today and 90 days down the road, our hope in humanity, in spirit, and each other can keep us safe in the storm. Our closing reading is number 666, The Legacy of Caring. We'll read it in unison. Despair is my private pain, born from what I have failed to say, failed to do, failed to overcome. Be still, my inner self. Let me rise to you. Let me reach down into your pain and soothe you. I turn to you to renew my life. I turn to the world, the streets of the city, the worn tapestry of brokerage firms, drug dealers, private estates, personal things in the bag lady's cart. Rage and pain in the faces that turn from me, afraid of their own inner worlds. This common world I love anew as the lifeblood of generations who refuse to surrender their humanity in an inhumane world courses through my veins. From within this world, my despair is transformed to hope, and I begin anew the legacy of caring. What if sometimes all we need to do is follow this flame, one among scores, hundreds, thousands of steadily flickering flames across the land, among so many peoples on the way to justice and into the land of peace? What if we dare to kindle that chalice? As we extinguish our chalice this morning, may the flame of hope and love continue to burn bright in your hearts until we meet again.